Well, good morning, friends. It's lovely to be here with you this morning. Let me pray. Father, as we come before your word, as we face the reality of disability and dementia, may we glorify your name. Amen. Friends, most of you know me as the chaplain. I've got a few other hats as well, and I'm going to run through them quickly. Just if that's significant, pay attention. If not, just tune me out. That's okay. So I've worked as an aged care chaplain for 17 years now. Formerly, I'm Reverend Ben Boland, Bachelor of Science, Research Honours in Bat Sex, Master of Divinity, Graduate Diploma in Ageing and Pastoral Studies. My first book's here. I've got a book chapter was published last month. I've got another book coming out mid-year. So, short version, I possibly know something about what I'm talking about. But today, Dave has got me to speak about disability and dementia, and that brings up an important point. For 17 years, I've been preaching primarily in aged care, which means a minimum of 50% of my congregation has had dementia for 17 years. So today that means that if you don't ask questions, you don't interrupt, and you don't interact with me, I'll think you're all asleep. So please do ask questions. If asking me is too scary, we're actually going to finish today's talk with a Q&A time. Janelle's got the mic, so she will take that round to you. But if you've got a question as we go along, ask it. I promise I don't bite, at least not unless you pay me a lot. Now, Dave tells me I've got at least 50 minutes to preach as a minimum time, which is good because I've got five topics to cover. And if I'd teach each of those for 5-10 minutes, that's 50 minutes, isn't it, Dave? And then I'm allowed another 50 just to go over, aren't I? Okay. I promise I won't be that long, and I'm actually going to get you guys all to work hard. Where's Margaret gone? I need Margaret up the front. I need Yoko and Norm up the front, and I need the youngest person in the room up the front. Daniel, you're it. We live in a time where human rights are pretty important to people, aren't they? Spread out a bit because I want to be able to point to you separately. It's a bit dangerous, isn't it? But the question is, why are human rights important? Are all people equally important, or are some more or less important? Now, I've got Daniel up here as my token young person. Thank you, Daniel. We've got Margaret as our token female and a person living with disability. Now, I've got Norm and Yoko up because I wanted to have the most beautiful person and the most ugly person up. Who's going to be which? Norm, what are you going to be? You're ugly? Okay, so Yoko has just become the most attractive person in the room. Okay? I know it'll take a little bit of imagination. So, who is the most important person up the front? Who has the most value? We've got ugly Norm. Yeah, thank you. I'm glad, Dave. Thank you. Come on, I want some more booze out of that. Ugly Norm. Well, what do you think about beautiful Yoko then? We've got Margaret. Not only is she a woman, she's disabled. She's in a wheelchair. She can't be as important as someone like beautiful Norm, can she? Or beautiful Yoko. Sorry, I keep confusing you two. It's a bit hard. And then we've got Daniel over here. Not only is he looking particularly shy today, but he's young. He's got potential, intelligence. He'll go forward to change the world. Who is the most important person? The whole four cases. Okay, why are they all important? In God's eyes, they are very important. And that's exactly right. Kay has nailed it. I meant to forget to get Kay up. I was going to make her the token old person. So we had Daniel at one end and Kay at the other. But we have great wisdom from Kay today. Of course, the Bible reading reminded us, and you guys can sit down, I'll stop being mean to you now, that everyone is created by... It's a three-letter word, starts with G, God. Everyone is created in God's image, men and women, young, old, beautiful, and Yoko. Not only that, but we are all so loved by God that He laid down His life for us. One way of thinking about it is the most expensive piece of visual art in the world today. Does anybody know what it is? Enigmatic smile. The Mona Lisa. It's the most valuable painting, the most valuable piece of artwork today in terms of visual arts. But you can buy a poster of the Mona Lisa for, what, $2, $5? It's exactly the same image, isn't it? And if I pulled up a poster of the Mona Lisa and held it up here and said, who wants to give me $50 for it? Is anybody going to buy it? No. It's a copy, isn't it? If I held up the real Mona Lisa and said, who wants it for $50? Any takers? Why? Because it's literally made by the master, isn't it? It bears Da Vinci's brushstrokes, his signature. And we are like that for God, aren't we? Each and every one of us is created by God. And in some strange way, we also bear His image, don't we? How valuable does that make us? From the youngest child to the oldest person, our value is incalculable. And as I said, and I'll turn the right way so I can look at the cross, not only are we created in God's image, but God died for us. Friends, that is the basis of our value. Daniel's capacity to grow and change the world is secondary. The amazing work Kay has done over her lifetime is secondary. Lloyd's amazing capacity to work with metal is secondary. Everything we do, have capacity to do, our wealth, our power, our beauty, our contribution, or even potential contribution, is a secondary at best factor. So, having looked at our value, let's now refresh ourselves on the gospel. What do you bring to God that you can have relationship with Him? Yourself? Praise and worship? Teachable heart? Those are all good things, but friends, I actually think you're all wrong. Let me get Yorick out to help me. You all did Shakespeare at school, didn't you? Alas, dear Yorick, I knew him well. This is just a plastic skull. I haven't stolen it off a resident, I promise. What can a skull do? Can it speak? Can it move? Can it vote? Can it contribute possibly some calcium to the soil? Sorry? It can drink, can it? Grin. Well, Yoko, come on up. If you're going to be obnoxious, I'm going to make you do some more work for me. Come on up here. What can a skull contribute to its salvation? Nothing, can it? Why? Because it's dead. By definition, a skull can't do nothing. But I've got Yoko up here, and he's very clever. Yoko, you can hold Yorick. And Yoko, to help Yorick, because Yorick's a little bit sick, just can't get good help these days. I've got some Band-Aids. You can put a Band-Aid on Yorick and see if that will help him speak or help us. Do you think the Band-Aid will help much? Come on, hurry up. Yorick's got something important to say. Thank you, Yoko. So Yorick's now got a Band-Aid. Is he going to be able to function any better? Is he sick? Is he just a little bit disobedient? You can sit down, you can be disobedient. Or is Yorick dead? He's dead, isn't he? And that's how the Bible describes us. We're not sick in our sins. We're not under the weather or comatose or asleep or having a bad day. We are dead in our transgressions. We don't contribute anything. Not even our own repentance or faith. Those are gifts of God. Just like Yorick can't do anything, neither can we. I'll put Yorick down for a minute. In fact, the Bible says that it's actually worse than us being dead in our sins. We're evil. God doesn't save good people. My old principal used to say, only bad people go to heaven. And I think he's wrong. Only evil people go to heaven. I am evil. You are evil. Until God rescues us, not because we are drowning, but because we are dead. The only thing we contribute to our salvation is a desperate need, a dire need. That's point one. Point two, I want to speak now. We're going to move from theology to some stuff in the medical world primarily about dementia and disability. So dementia is popularly dementia is popularly conceived as an issue with memory, forgetfulness, yes? But actually, dementia is much more profound than that. Dementia is an umbrella term for a number of different diseases, which are degenerative and terminal and affect the brain. Diseases, plural. There are over 200 different types of dementia. The most common form is Alzheimer's. Very good. About 70%. But because it's multiple conditions, you can have multiple forms of dementia. So my dad has dementia. He's living in a secure unit. He has Alzheimer's. He has vascular dementia. And he has pugilistic dementia. Degenerative. It only gets worse. Terminal. Dementia will kill you. Gentlemen, do you know what they're most likely to write on your death certificate for cause of death? What's the biggest killer of Australian men? Sorry, big voice? Heart attack, yeah. Cardiovascular issues. And the most common place for a bloke to die in Australia is on the toilet first thing in the morning. Of course, if you're straining to pass something, it does some funky things to your circulatory system, and you can often die from a heart attack straining. So make sure you have your Orbran. And don't push too hard. Ladies, what are you most likely to have written on your death certificate? It's not cancer. It's not stroke. It's not domestic violence. It's not heart disease. It's dementia. Dementia is the biggest killer of Australian women. Gentlemen, don't worry. They say in about 5 years' time, it will be the biggest killer for Australian men too. So you're not going to miss out by much. That's pretty scary, isn't it? Now, there is a pile of stuff I could go on for quite longer than 50 minutes, but Dave said that I've got to shut up this time of sort of next week. But Rotary Stanthorpe, who runs the Dementia Stanthorpe Group, have organised a number of copies of this, which is the book produced by Dementia Australia, The Dementia Guide. I will put, I think I've got 10 copies out the back. If we run out of copies, I can get more. So if you want to know more about dementia in terms of the medical stuff, that's there. There is hope in the midst of dementia, by the way, but I'm going to come to that in our application section. So, disability. How do you define disability? What is it to be disabled? Can't do things the way you normally would? That's not a bad definition, Margaret, but there's a problem even with Margaret's definition. Because who can do, well, Dave was saying over the last 20 years he's been, 15 years you've been increasing in size, mate? You're being nice to yourself. So, Dave, can you do today what you did 20 years ago? Yes, but the consequences are different. Friends, over our lifespan, we all have times where we can do lots of things and where those things change. Some things increase with knowledge and experience. We saw that in the prayer time, didn't we? We can not only pray stuff, we can pray having seen it. But lots of things slow down too. I'm not as fast as I once was, and I was never very quick. And part of the problem is, in terms of disability, in one sense, we are all disabled. I could go around the room, and I suspect most of us have at least one medical illness, yes? I've got a few. If you live long enough, sooner or later, one of your body systems will start breaking down, whether that's your brain with dementia or your body. So in that sense, we're all disabled. And friends, this is the hard bit. God actually created us to be diverse. We're different to each other, aren't we? But with different capacities, can't we? I look at Lloyd, and his ability to work with metal is just amazing. I am never going to be that good. I look at Margaret and what she does with card making. Again, I am never going to be that good. Is that true for everyone else? We're created different, with different gifts, different experience, different capacities. But we're all created with limitations. Even if you have 20/20 vision, you probably don't have full hearing, do you? So we're all different, and we're actually designed to be frail, to be limited beings. The only limitless one is, three letters, starts with G, God. And one of the things that I think disability theology can teach us is about what we look forward to in heaven. Of course, there is a temptation for us to think about heaven and say, oh, it's going to be spectacular, and it is. And to sort of assume that we'll go to heaven, I won't make Yoko put it on, and we'll become a superhero. Suddenly we'll get a six-pack, or at least abs as opposed to flabs. But in heaven, in perfection, we are not going to be Batman or Superman. We don't know quite what it will look like. We know it will be good. But we are not going to be without limits in eternity. And one of the options we have now is to learn to live with our God-given limits today. Okay, that's point two. Have I spent the 50 minutes yet? Everybody asleep yet? Good. Well, keep going and just nap on for a while. So, if we've looked at our theology of personhood and the gospel, we've looked at dementia and disability, I want to try and pull those four areas together into some application. And the first point is this: people come to faith and grow in faith through the gospel. Is that true? Feel free to nod at this stage, not just nod off. We all come to and grow in faith through the gospel, the good news of Christ crucified. People living with disability come into and grow in faith through the gospel. Thank you. Same answer again, isn't it? Third question. People living with dementia come to and grow in faith through the gospel. It's the same. Now, if you are feeling interested and want to read more about dementia particularly and gospel ministry, I recommend this book. I want it back, but you're welcome to borrow it. It's looking at a theology of conversion in the midst of dementia. The short version, if you don't want to read it, is that people living with dementia, even quite advanced dementia, come to faith and grow in their faith. Dementia does not stop the gospel. Because who contributes to their salvation? Does Yorick contribute? Do we contribute? Does our capacity contribute? No. It's all about, three-letter word again, God and His power. So what's the application for us? Well, if everybody comes to faith and grows in faith through the gospel, and that includes everybody living with disability who comes to faith and grows in faith through the gospel, and everyone with dementia who comes to faith and grows in faith through dementia, what do you think we should do? Share the gospel? Oh, that's a hard one, isn't it? As a church community, we worship, we celebrate family, we show compassion, and we equip. They are outworkings of the gospel, isn't it? If you need some more whys, let me give you three quick ones. Firstly, we are called to love our neighbor as we love ourselves. So we need to share the gospel. In Scripture, there are over 40 repetitions of the specific commandment to care for widows. Perhaps the most famous is James 1. Religion that God our Father accepts is this: to care for orphans and widows in their distress. The question for us is our religion acceptable to God? Are we caring for widows? If I want to be really nasty, I'd say, as a Baptist, are we a denominational movement today in Baptist circles, Dave? Oh, denominational movement. So as the Baptist denominational movement, what emphasis, what resources are put towards ministry with people under 20? What percentage of energy is spent in that space? Quite a bit, I'd suggest, yeah? What proportion of resources is spent on people over 80? A lot more than we used to? Well, I want to suggest that we can continue to improve in that area. Because if young people and old people are all people, all created in God's image by God and died for by God, then we need to love them. Well, friends, if you're not asleep now, I've almost finished, so that's a good sign, isn't it? Only two more points to go. So how do we do that? We've looked at the why, we've looked at the what, now we come to the why. And I think of why in terms of the three P's. And I brought some props, because P and props start with the same letter. The first one, and this will help you remember the three P's, is that this is not a water bottle, is it? It's not a drink bottle. But it does remind you of peeing, yeah? And I hope you all have peed today. I hope you will continue to pee tomorrow. And I want to encourage you to keep peeing. Not just in the loo, but with three special P's. Prayer, presence, and pastoral care. Can you remember those three? Well, I want to try and reinforce them now. Anthony, I need you up the front, my friend. Not only is Anthony a handyman, but he's got a Ryobi keytring, so that means he knows how to use this. This is my little circular saw. It's a great tool. Be careful the battery is in there, mate. Yeah. Now, can you turn that on for us a minute, Anthony? I won't chop the microphone off, but it's a really handy tool, isn't it? I can cut stuff, I can garden with it, I use it in my shed all the time. What happens if I do this, though? I've taken the battery out, a power tool becomes a what? Paperweight, perhaps? It's useless without the power, isn't it? Come on, cut something for me, mate. Come on, faster. Doesn't work without power. And as Christians, you can put it in, you've got two hands. Our power comes from God. And the normal way he dispenses his power, you can sit down, Anthony. Get back my sword. The normal way God dispenses his power is through prayer. Now, he's not limited to our prayers, but that's the normal way he chooses to act. If I turned up on a job site and didn't bring the battery but brought my saw, is that going to do anything? Why? No power. If we try and minister and love people without prayer, what's going to happen? It's not going to work, because it's not about me and my strength, it's about God and his strength, and therefore we need to pray. So first P is prayer. Second P, presence. Who here liked Christmas as a kid? Oh, three people. I'm glad you guys had a very deprived childhood. We all like presents, don't we? Getting stuff? Think for a moment, what's the best present you've ever received? A chainsaw? At least Yoko's honest. I was thinking about this as I prepared the sermon, and the best present I've ever gotten in terms of a material thing is that Lloyd gave me a car a few years ago. It's a big gift, isn't it? And what's the greatest gift we can give each other? Time, presence, isn't it? Because you know what's more important to me and more valuable to me than the car Lloyd's given me? Spending time with Lloyd. Who here has been in a long-distance relationship? Oh, one person, three people, four. Okay, we've gotten a few more hands, thank you. Is it easy? Why? Because the further away you are, the harder it is to love someone, isn't it? Whether that's a romantic love or platonic love, distance makes love harder. And that is particularly true in aged care. We've got 103 beds up at Karama. One of our residents got out for church this morning. She's sitting in the back row. I have residents who do not get visited at all. Even the really blessed residents might get one visit a day. So who's good at maths here? Come on, put your hand up or I'll volunteer you. Daniel, what's her name? Sarah. Okay, Sarah, I need your help today. So Sarah, how many hours in a day? Big voice, 24 hours in a day. Now, if you sleep for 10 hours and it takes you 2 hours for breakfast, lunch and dinner, so how many hours is that? 10 plus 2 is 12. And you'll say we'll take another hour with the bathroom duties, personal cares. How many is that? 13 hours. How many hours left of the day if you take 13 away from 24? 11. What do you do with those if you're at Karama or you're living in your own home? That's 11 hours. Now, you can watch television for a bit, but who wants to watch 11 hours of television a day? No? Now, many of us who are working think an extra 11 hours a day would be wonderful. I know how much Anthony manages to pack into his day. I reckon he could do with an extra 100 hours a day. But if you're retired, if you're bedbound or you can't leave your house, that's 11 hours a day by yourself. Can you see the significance of presence? I don't know about you. Who here has been on a church mission or something and done door knocking? Anybody? Oh, Dave has, I was going to say. It's a bit out of fashion these days. Do you know why it's out of fashion? Because it's not very effective as a general rule. The last mission I went on and did door knocking was almost 20 years ago. We did it in Surrey Hills in Sydney. The only places that opened their doors were the brothels. They did offer to put up the flyer for the church camp, but I didn't know brothels had notice boards, but you learn something new. But if I said to you, go and door knock Stanthorpe, and you each door knocked 100 people, how many conversations do you think you'd have? Maybe one each, if you were lucky. And the person who opened the door would probably be an older person who's not working and who is desperate for a chat, wouldn't they? Desperate for presence. Desperate for community. We are built for relationships. And relationships require presence. Third P, and this is perhaps the tricky one. What have we started with? Prayer, presence, and thirdly, pastoral care. Now, it's a bit tricky because sometimes pastoral care can seem intimidating, yes? Well, there's two pieces of good news. A, you have Janelle here, who literally teaches pastoral care. She did a seminar or a workshop here at church the other day, didn't she? And I hear it was spectacular. So if you're not comfortable about pastoral care, talk to... It's not God this time, it starts with a J and it's not Jesus. It's Janelle. But at its most simple, pastoral care is loving people. And you can all do that, can't you? It starts with praying for someone. That could be with them or by yourself quietly in your room, couldn't it? Turning up, being present with them is a form of pastoral care. Now, we want to give great pastoral care that is rich, and that is a whole topic, if not year-long course, but at its basis, it's looking to love people. So I provided pastoral care for Lloyd this morning. I gave him a book on 1920s American cars. He probably didn't think it was pastoral care, but it's a way of loving him, isn't it? Cutting a rose for someone, giving them a bunch of flowers, remembering their name, shaking a hand. That's all pastoral care, isn't it? And pastoral care is at its greatest when we can not only share a book about cars or a handshake or a hug, but we can share the gospel. Now, I say share there deliberately. Please do not hear me saying you should get the Bible. Yoko, I need you again. Well, he won't come up. Why won't he come up? Because nobody wants to be bashed, do they? And if we remember our theology, what do we contribute to our salvation? Yorick again? Nothing. Who brings people to salvation? God. So we don't need to beat them around the head with the gospel, but we should be looking for opportunities to love them and share the gospel with them. So I'll pick on Yorick again. This time I'm using him as a brain. So if this is Yorick and you think about Yorick, take the bone away and I'm holding a brain in my hand. What does the brain control? Everything. So while we think about dementia often as memory loss, it affects all kinds of things. So one of the early signs for my dad was he started getting lost. Now, I can get lost in a wet paper bag, but my dad can drive somewhere once and 10 years later drive back again, but suddenly he started getting lost. It wasn't his memory that had gone, it was his spatial awareness. Now, the short version is we understand very little about the brain. from a medical perspective. We know basically what the pump heart does. What does the heart do? Lub, dub, lub, dub, lub, dub. It's pretty simple, isn't it? It's a pump. The brain is so much more complicated. But one of the things we know about the brain is that different parts of the brain control different things. So if you have a major injury to the right side of your brain and a stroke there, what will happen? It'll affect your left side because the hemispheres control the other side of the brain. Yeah? The bit of your brain just behind your forehead controls your inhibitions. So that's the Dear Davis Fat thought that you don't say out loud, yeah? So dementia impacts whichever part of the brain is affected. So vascular dementia is basically strokes. So it affects the part of your brain that had the stroke. Frontotemporal dementia, which affects this part at the front, affects your inhibitions. It's particularly an issue, gentlemen, for people who've taken head knocks. That's why contact sport, although I love it, is not very good for us. So dementia impacts everything the brain controls. Spatial awareness, your circadian rhythm, knowing when it's sleep time or wake time. If you think back to when you had small children, can you give a newborn infant porridge? Why not? It's nice and soft, isn't it? It's smooth, sweet, it's rich. What would happen if you gave a newborn infant porridge? They'd choke. Because a baby needs to learn to swallow. In fact, babies even need to learn how to breastfeed. It's not just mums. And because it's a learnt skill, you can lose it with dementia. Okay, Lloyd asked about learning. He hasn't learned how to use the microphone, but that's okay. No. The short version is, yes, dementia leads often to loss of learning. So my dad hasn't remembered my name for 2 years now. That's a loss of memory. But the evidence is actually really clear that people living with dementia can and do learn. It's often slower than when we were younger, but to be ruthlessly honest, the research says that up until you're about 5 or 10, you learn an awful lot faster than when you're older than that. So it happens right throughout life. So can people with dementia learn? Unequivocally. Is it quick and easy? No.
Have you got a story?
I've got lots of stories. And Michael's stolen the second half of my thunder. So my first half had been Kay and Yoko's thing about please come and care. And not simply at Karama. I would love to see you all there every day, don't get me wrong. But there are many people in this community, in this street, in Amiens, and around in the community who desperately need care too. Michael's raised the second point that I wanted to finish with, and that is that there is a myth that stops ministry to older people and people living with dementia. And that myth is that people living with dementia can't come to faith and that older people are hard to the gospel. Has anybody heard that? I have. I've seen people say, yeah, oh, but they're, oh, Friends, the academic research is really, really clear. As people grow older, they become more interested in spirituality. Now, it's academic research, not Christian research, so spirituality in this sense means meaning, purpose, and hope. Do you know anything? Does Jesus say anything about meaning, purpose, and hope? I'm pretty sure he does, doesn't he? If you can't talk about Jesus in talking about meaning, purpose, and hope, I don't even know where to start with you. So that's the abstract answer. Let me answer Michael's question with another story. This dates to my time in Sydney. We had a lady come in. She was English. She came into the mainstream unit and started pushing furniture and other things over. And it turned out that in her childhood, she'd lived through the Blitz, and she was trying to prepare for it. Because of that and some other things, and her dementia got worse and worse, she was moved from the mainstream down into the secure dementia unit. And I would see her most days. And every time I had church or anything Christian on, I would say, "Would you like to come?" And she'd say, "No." And then one day she decided we were doing some singing down in the lounge room, and she liked the singing, so she came and joined us. And then a few weeks later, not only was she coming every week, but she was dragging other people, whether they wanted it or not, to come down. And we did a Christian short course. I think it was Alpha. I can't remember. It's too long ago now. See, I forget God too, don't I? We all forget God. It's not about my memory, it's about God. But she started coming regularly to church, and then she would grab me in the corridor and say, "I don't like God and I never liked church, but I really need to go now. I want to go to church. Have we got church today?" Now, she never, to my knowledge, prayed the sinner's prayer. There was no moment I can point to and say she was converted on the 5th of May at 3:15. But I think, in fact, I am confident that God worked in her. Is she able to explain penal substitutionary atonement? No. Did God save her? Yes. And he worked in her in an amazing way. I better shut up now, but I've got one quick thing to say. As I said, I've been working in aged care chaplaincy full-time for 17 years now. In each of those 17 years, I have seen multiple people come to faith. I am not a great evangelist. That's actually not my gifting. But every year, it has been multiple people. And for most of those years, I have seen more people come to faith in my ministry than the local church altogether where I was worshipping on a Sunday. Friends, if you want to catch fish, you go where the fish are, yeah? My kids have a joke, "Dad's fishing spots are so secret, not even the fish know where they are." And I don't catch very many fish. If you want to see people come to faith through God and his work, you need to go to where the people are, the people who don't know him. Go where there's no faith. And there are great opportunities for that in ministering with older people and people living with disability. Dave, who am I handing the microphone over to? I finished question and answer time. You can go. Sorry. Oh, he's the pastor, isn't it? I can't be rude.
But I have the last say. We have a couple of different things that we do with older folk. One is Meals on Wheels. So if you're interested in helping out with Meals on Wheels, Roz Flood is coordinating that. Bill, look at me. Roz Flood is looking after that. Yes, so have a chat to that. Yoko is going in with Ben Thursday mornings for a chapel service in Carramar. If you feel that God's sort of leading you into going into Carramar and just hanging with people, chat to Ben. And if there's a few of us, then we can do that together. So you're not alone in doing that, but there will be space to be able to work out how to work with the processes of going and visiting. Also, not being ageist, but our craft groups have a few lonely people involved. Margaret, is that true? Older folk. And so if you want to just come and hang out and befriend people who are lonely, that's another place. So there are different options of how to process how to care for people. And if you're feeling God sort of saying, because sometimes God invites and sometimes God pushes, if you feel God just leading you in that place, come and talk to me and we'll work out something and we'll find a place. Is that okay?
I'm going to steal the last word quickly. The other thing is, if you want to start very easily, on Wednesday morning, the cafe at Karamar is open at 10:30. And there's a few people who come from the community there. So that's a really soft, easy. If you can sit and drink coffee or tea or hot chocolate, you can do that. So that's a really simple way to start with presence. I'll